Savannah, and we received an email, actually right for the Grambleite of our university.
Is that the, your, like, school newspaper?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What school?
Grambler State University.
Grambler State University. Okay. Where is that?
It's actually in Grambling, Louisiana, which is in northeast Louisiana.
Okay.
We are, like, I want to say maybe a, are you familiar with Louisiana at all?
Just a little bit, like New Orleans and a few of the bigger cities.
Have you heard of Shreveport?
Uh-huh, Shreveport.
Yes, we're about an hour out of Shreveport.
Okay.
I'm actually a history major. Just a little bit of information about myself before I go into asking you about yourself. I'm a history major, and I just started writing for the Grambleite, and, you know, my our editor had an email on her desk from, I want to say her name was Miss Katie.
Yeah, from Strategic Vision. That's my PR firm. She's very good.
Yes, and they sent us an email about basically about how your food cravings can be a sign of serious health issues.
Yeah, it can be. It's also, we use food in our program, which is called NAME program. We use it to help with mental illness, which includes substance abuse, because people forget that step, and it's an extremely important step. And it could help people have a more successful withdrawal if they are addicted to drugs or alcohol. And it could even help people if they have a mental illness like anxiety or depression or autism or PTSD or any of those things that are considered mental illnesses by the National Association on Mental Illness, which is called NAMI.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you start your organization?
When did I start what? Say it again.
Your organization, the Nutritional Addiction Mitigation Eating.
Well, the NAMI is fairly new. I just got it patented last July. And when it first started, it was just for people that were addicted to drugs or alcohol that were in addiction clinics. Then over time, we spread out and we got the other two therapeutic areas. One is the outpatient treatment, the best one being intensive outpatient treatment, where they go a lot, but they're not staying in the facility. And then the third one is those that just go to a therapist, you know, to try to handle the different problems of either substance abuse or mental illness. But that's by far the biggest area, because more people do that than go to a clinic or even an outpatient clinic. So now it handles all three areas, and it's very exciting because it's such a huge problem in the United States.
It is. And I feel like it actually goes unnoticed oftentimes. With everything else that's been going on in the state, you know, with our national security issues and, you know, the things that are going on across the world.
Oh, yeah, with all the politics going on, it's easy to forget, but there's over 30 million people in the United States that are addicted to drugs or alcohol, and there's between 60 and 90 million people that have a mental illness, which also includes the drugs and alcohol.
Wow.
So that's a huge amount of people in the United States. And when we have different things happen, like an election or, you know, sometimes silly things, we tend to forget the more, what I consider at least, the more important things.
Right. Now, I did a little bit of background research, and it said that you are an official advocate for President Obama's Presidential Active Lifestyle Award.
Well, that was a while ago, but
okay.
Yeah, I actually did a report for Congress on how to lower health care costs without using a mandate, and then
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
It's under my website, my regular personal website, nameprogram.com. Is one of them, but my regular website is dr for drkeithcantor.com. And if you look under resources, it has there the Blue Ribbon panel. And I did report with several other doctors for Congress on how to lower health care costs without using a mandate. Mm-hmm. And it was huge. I don't remember the numbers, but we lowered it like $300 billion a year.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Without using a mandate. So one of the times that President Obama came, and he didn't come over to me himself, it was somebody from his staff asked if I could help. As a matter of fact, yesterday, the day before yesterday, I was just asked if I would help them with something that they just formed, or it's a new nonprofit called youthsinrecovery.org, which is youths that are having problems with drugs or alcohol, and they asked me if I would set up a chapter here locally, which I said I would. So I try to help any way I can, because it's a huge problem. If you think of the numbers, if there's, let's just say the 60 million figure is correct, and I think we only have about 360 million people in the United States, that means one out of six people in the United States has either a drug or alcohol problem or a mental illness. And that's a pretty big number.
A lot.
And I find that much more important than two politicians arguing over who sent the funnier picture of their wife, and which headlined the news for 3 days. Not saying that it was correct or trying to get into politics, but I think 60 million people that are having life-threatening problems is much more important.
Most definitely. You know, I've noticed that, you know, and oftentimes in the media, the things that are focused on are the least important. And the things that are important, you know, they kind of go either unnoticed or, you know, a lot of people really don't understand the importance of how important they really are.
Well, you're in college. I mean, and I don't want to get you in trouble, so you have to watch this, but how many of your friends drink, or people you know, and we'll leave out the word friends, would you guess they may drink too much alcohol or mess around with drugs too much as a percentage?
As a matter of fact, you know, my university actually has if you ask my personal opinion, my university has a really big problem with that, and I want to say, I know that this is going to make my university look so bad, but I want to say a good 80%.
Okay, so even if you're wrong and it's half of that, think how terrible that is. And just, you know, I don't think your university is way worse than a lot of the universities around the country. I don't think it just picked your university. When they were in New Hampshire, which to me is a pretty calm state, you never hear anything happening, you know, anything bad happening. And if you listen to the last debates, they have a huge heroin problem, one of the biggest in the country, in New Hampshire. I didn't know they did anything but skied there. you know what I mean? And so it's everywhere.
It is. And, you know, I think that in the places that you would least expect, you know, they have the biggest problem. I know, like, you know, big cities, marijuana is a big drug also.
And it's really hard to fight something like that when it's legal in, I don't know how many states it really is now, but medically it's legal in like 15, 20. And socially, it will be legal if it's not legal already in about 10 states. So how do you lecture the children and tell them how bad something is when it's legal? And states are making money on the taxes.
So I wanted to ask, because you are a doctor, I would like to ask your opinion about, you know, marijuana being a medical, you know, a medical, like a, I want to say maybe a cure. I don't want to really say cure, but marijuana being used for medical reasons.
There's some uses for marijuana medically, like seizures for children, when people have certain diseases and they can't eat, like my dad passed away a long time ago, but he had pancreatic cancer. He just shrunk away to nothing.
Wow.
And that's what happens when you have pancreatic cancer. It would probably help for that, but what happens is when we try to do something good, it goes out of control, and when they took the substance out of the marijuana, I think it's THC, that makes you high, but it still did the good things for the drugs, they couldn't give it away. So if it was really just to help medically, why would somebody care if it had THC in it or not?
Yeah.
And I mean, literally, the sales dropped like 85%. So they had to put it back in.
There was no THC.
So I'm not saying that means that all of them are using it to get high, but I think it's way taken advantage of, and it hurts the people that really need it for medical reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, a few always ruin it for the many. Now look at what we have to do to go through the airports now, because of what happened. And you know, there's not a hijacking, you know, four times a day. We had, you know, several of them in one day, and it changed the life of all of us. And it's the same thing with almost anything. A few bad apples, or maybe sometimes several bad apples, ruin it for the rest of the people, and it hurts, and it's not fair.
I completely agree with you, and I believe like a lot of people tend to, you know, they tend to overdo it, like, especially people in the younger generation, they tend to do things in excess. I do have a few questions.
Okay.
Concerning, like, you know, the food cravings that can be applied to food, like, issues.
It's really reverse. Let me try to explain it to you. Are you taping this, or do you have to take notes?
I'm actually taking notes.
Okay, good.
I wish I was taping this.
Well, if you want, if before we get off, if you give me your email, I'll send you a tape of it.
Oh, great.
So now I'm going to be your best friend twice.
Yay.
Okay, so when I say it's really the opposite, let me explain what I mean. What makes people want to take drugs or alcohol is something in our body called opiate receptors. And it's just clusters of cells. And when those and we have them in our brain, our spinal cord, and our gastrointestinal tract, you know, our gut. When the opiate receptors get stimulated, they release a chemical that gives our body urges. All the urges that our body has, except for sex, come from the opiate receptors. All of them. So if you tend to have a problem with alcohol, and then you stimulate your opiate receptors, either through alcohol or foods that stimulate the opiate receptors, like sugar or gluten or dairy or most sugar substitutes or certain dyes or preservatives, and that'll stimulate the opiate receptors. Well, and release the chemical, well, the body doesn't know what the urge is for. It just knows it has one. And if the problem that the body has, or what it usually has the urge for, is alcohol or Oxycontin or whatever, then all of a sudden you have a craving for that. That's where the food comes in. So it's really reverse. What we're doing is we're stimulating our opiate receptors, not knowing it. So if somebody seems like they're addicted to sugar, they really are, because sugar stimulates the opiate receptors, and the body gets used to it and tells us to have more sugar or simple carbohydrates. Dairy stimulates the opiate receptors. Gluten, which is wheat products, stimulates the opiate receptors. And then, like I said, most sugar substitutes except for stevia. So if your opiate receptors are stimulated and the body's releasing the chemical, it's way easier to be swayed to take drugs or alcohol than if your opiate receptors aren't stimulated. Now, I use it, like I said, in reverse, and when the people are in the clinics, they not only don't have the drugs, I make special menus so their opiate receptors aren't stimulated. And that's what I do indirectly for those people that are in the intensive outpatient, and even those that have a mental illness, like, let's say, anxiety. If you have anxiety, your body doesn't have enough serotonin or melatonin, which is the things that make you relax. So I make menus, or my staff, not just me, makes menus that have foods that either help build it or really have melatonin in it and serotonin in it, so it calms you down, so you don't have as much anxiety. Now, in most cases, it won't cure it, but if it makes it the episodes happen less often, and makes you less anxious, using that one as the example, and if you're already seeing a therapist and you're able to be able to have a small dose of medicine, that's a big win. So when they're saying certain foods cause it, that's what's happening. Foods that stimulate the opiate receptors make it much easier for people to get involved or swayed or talked into or go with the crowd on drugs and alcohol.
Now, what are some, common foods that stimulate these?
First of all, if you go to my website, it's called Named, N-A-M-E-D, program.com, and you can get a free week's worth of menus there, and it explains it in real, real detail. And it's called Named, like you're named Jade.
Yes.
So it's namedprogram.com, so you could go to that. And then, like I said afterwards, if you give me an email, I'll send you a recording of this. Hopefully, as long as we're not on for too long, I could do it. And you'll have a list, but the biggest one is sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar stimulates the opiate receptors more than anything. I mean, I've heard people say sugar is more addicting than like cocaine.
Right, it is.
So sugar is the biggest one. Dairy is a big one. Dairy products, except for yogurts. Gluten, which are wheat products. Those are three big ones. Most sugar substitutes, except for stevia, which is pretty natural.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the main ones. And anything that has lots of non-natural additives and preservatives in it, all of those will stimulate the opiate receptors and make you much more susceptible to drugs and alcohol urges. And then if you do it enough, you get addicted.
So do you feel like a lot of the foods that are, sold in common grocery stores have these added preservatives with the intent to...
No, they're not. The food companies don't put this in there with the intent of trying to get us to take drugs. But they do put it in there with the intent to make us want to eat the food again and again. That's why what we call junk food a lot, all of them have things like sugar in it, simple carbohydrates in it, gluten in it, dairy products in it, etc. And it's because they want to stimulate our opiate receptors, not on purpose. They just want us to want the food again and again. It's like that old commercial, I think it's with a potato chip, you can't just eat one.
Yes, the leaves, I think.
Yeah, and that's the idea of it. Look at a ketchup label one time and see what the main ingredients are. Except for tomatoes, it's salt and sugar.
Yes.
But it's right up there, and it makes you want more and more of it. And you could see how people eat ketchup. I mean, they eat it like it's a vegetable, part of their meals.
Most definitely. I was also looking at, I looked at one of their websites.
One is the drkeithcantor.com and the other is namedprogram.com.
Yes, and the one that I looked at earlier basically it was a PDF, it was about 8 pages, and it kind of just gave like a brief introduction about name.
Okay. Yeah, like about under named. It's N-A-M-E-D. It stands for Nutritional Addiction Mitigation Eating and Drinking. That's why I just say named, because nobody's ever going to remember that.
Right. Now, I was saying, basically the menus that you guys create are a healthy alternative with all natural and organic foods.
Here's the first of all, I believe in all natural foods. Organic sometimes may be a little over the top, but I believe in having all natural foods. The problem is, because of the way things are set up, it tends to make it more expensive. And foods that have cheap stuff in it, like sugar, which is subsidized, or high fructose corn syrup, and corn is subsidized, poorer people tend to buy cheaper food. And kids tend to buy cheaper foods. And those cheaper foods tend to have this stuff in it, and that we are talking about, these type of foods, which cause the problems. So it's, which came first, the chicken or the egg? But the bottom line is, if you eat regular, healthy foods all the time, you won't have these problems, or they'd be drastically cut down. But a potato chip is a bag of potato chips is way cheaper than getting a grilled piece of chicken.
Right. Now, why do you think it is that, well, I mean, of course, because it's organic, but, like, why do you think it is that certain health food stores won't take, like, you know, the government assistance, like, for example, my mother told me that, you know, Trader Joe's doesn't accept, like, the SNAP or, like, the EBT for those who can't afford the organic foods, because I'm pretty sure there are people who would love to eat.
In general, and this is me, and I tend to be more conservative than probably most students at your university, but when you start accepting things from the government, you start giving up control. And they don't want to do that, whatever it is, whether it's on food or anything else. So if you give up control to get something, or I should say the reverse, if you're going to get something for free from somebody, in this case the government, they're not doing it to just be nice, they're doing it because they get control, and then they can do more things that they think are good for us. And they, the government, is really the people, and we're not always right.
Right. Now, do you think that a lot of the food, even in certain organic and health food stores, do you feel like all the time they're all organic? I was actually reading an article that was stating how some of the food at Trader Joe's isn't organic.
Well, it'll be labeled. If it's labeled organic, in most cases, and when I say most, I mean real, real high, like 99%. If it's certified organic or certified all natural, it is. Because, you know, that's a huge fine. You get in a lot of trouble with the government if you make claims like that. Now, they could have stuff that doesn't say it, but it's in the store and people just assume it's organic, but it doesn't say anything on it, and that's not their fault. It's, if a store sells 90% organic and 10% not organic, and you happen to buy something and didn't bother to look at the label, that's really not the store's fault.
Right.
We can't force a store to say, okay, you could only have organic or all natural. That's not fair either.
Right. Now, what about, what are your, you know, your thoughts on, how do you say it, Monsanto, the agricultural company?
It's not any company. It doesn't matter if it's Monsanto, DuPont, or whatever, are going to do things. We're a capitalistic society, and they're going to do things that help them make the most money. So you're talking really about GMO when you talk about that. And they have a very good line. They can make the food they believe cheaper, help poor people, help third world countries, help protect the food against disease and drought and things like that, and that's why they say they do it. The people who are against it don't want it because they say that it's not healthy. I tend to not like GMO, but there's no real fancy long-term tests that show that GMO products hurt people. But it may take 10, 20, 30 years to find out, so I would rather stay away from it. But their public relations, in a sense, is better. They could feed millions and millions of more people because, you know, they're not affected as much by bugs, and they're not affected as much by drought. That's pretty good PR also. So you have to look at both sides of it, but you have to remember, any company, except for a nonprofit, is there to make a profit.
Right.
So they're going to do what makes the most profit for them. And that's how our whole country is built, so we can't stop that all of a sudden because, you know,
right.
Everything would fall apart. Unless, I guess if Bernie Sanders wins, a lot of that will stop.
Yeah, I've actually been looking into that and seeing, you know, as far as the candidates are concerned.
Well, I just meant he's a socialist, though. He's not a capitalist.
Really? Oh, and do you feel like the country would be better a socialist side than a capitalist?
Yeah, well, no, but see, most countries that are socialist, except for the ones that we know as communist, are really a mixture.
Okay.
You know, the government just does more stuff. Even the United States, if you think of it, does way more stuff than the money that it takes in. So we're basically a socialistic country, too, because we're not just doing it by balancing the books, or we wouldn't have a $17 trillion deficit. So we do that. But we need a bunch of capitalistic companies out there to pay taxes and to do a lot of stuff for us, or we won't have the money to do these programs. So it's, again, it's a catch-22.
Definitely a a lot easier when they were bartering back in the day.
Yeah, right, in the old days, yeah. if you take these four rocks, I'll give you this piece of chicken.
Yes.
I don't think that's going to happen again.
I highly doubt it. It would be nice, though. It would be nice. I could definitely trade in a roll of tissue or two.
Yeah. Well, did I answer everything for you?
Yes, those are all of the questions that I asked.
The only reason I'm rushing a little bit is if it goes too long, then I have to get somebody else to send you the tape, which I might have to anyhow. So if I do that, I'll get it to you in the next day or two.
Okay, well, that's fine. I'm doing the article for the paper, and it'll...
And you wrote down enough, I'm sure, anyhow. But I'll move it to my computer now, and if it's not too big, I'll try to send it to you right away. Let me write down your email address.
Let me know when you're ready.
One second. Okay, I'm ready.
It's I as in igloo, N as in Nancy, O as in order, order. The number 2, Excel.
Number 2, then what?
Excel, E-X-C-E-L.
.com?
At gmail.com, yes.
Wait, so let me say it back to you. I is an Indian, N is in November, Oscar Romeo Delta, Echo Romeo, the number 2, Excel.com.
Yes.
Okay, I'll send it to you as soon as I figure it out on the computer.
Now, if I have any other questions.
Yeah, sure, you could call me back. And you have my cell number anyhow. 678. Well, I don't want to put that on the tape. But you have my cell number. That's the number you were going to call. So, perfect. Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
No, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Great day.